I appreciate the good job that Stephen's doing and the kind way he's approaching this. And this is the way it always should be done when we're discussing the Bible. Even though we have serious differences, we can still try to press our points and do it in a friendly way. There should be no personal attacks in a debate such as this, and I'm glad that there haven't been any. It's just a study of the Bible. In response to me bringing up animal sacrifices a couple of times, and I'll bring it up some more in this speech, Stephen says, well, there's been a change of the law. And Hebrews 10 says there's no more animal sacrifices. Well, Stephen, did all the passages you just brought up in Acts don't prove what you say they prove, because you admit there's been a change in the law. And we don't have to do animal sacrifices. So all the things about Paul keeping the custom of the fathers and everything like that, but you don't believe he kept the old law as such, because you don't believe he did animal sacrifices, because you believe there's been a change of the law. And you quoted Hebrews 10 to prove that. Did Paul keep the animal sacrifices? Is that what all those passages in Acts prove, that he kept the animal sacrifices? Those were the customs of the fathers. They kept animal sacrifices. We'll talk more about that in a moment. But now, if he can go to Hebrews 10 and say there's been a change of the law, and it says animal sacrifices aren't binding anymore, then why is it valid for me to go to a passage like Romans 7 and show that the Sabbath or the Ten Commandments is not binding anymore? Remember, Romans 7 is talking about how that we're dead to a law, we're delivered from a law. And that is the same law that said thou shalt not covet. Now, last time I checked, that was the Ten Commandments. And the Bible says we're dead to or delivered from that law. So Hebrews 10 teaches the animal sacrifices are not binding anymore. Why doesn't Romans 7 teach the Ten Commandments are not binding anymore? It's the same Bible. And then Colossians 2, remember? I didn't write this. I know it's clear. I didn't write it. It says that Jesus blotted out these ordinances, took them out of the way, nailed them to the cross, and then he gives us some representative examples. The meat of the drink, which is the daily, the holy day, the 7 yearly feast, the new moon, which is the monthly, and the Sabbath days, which is weekly. He says, because Jesus has blotted these out, these laws, and nailed them to the cross, don't let anybody judge you with respect to them anymore. In other words, you're not sinning if you don't keep the Sabbath anymore. You're not sinning if you don't do the new moon anymore. You're not sinning if you don't keep the Feast of Pentecost anymore. You're not sinning if you don't do the daily sacrifices anymore. And that's pretty clear, isn't it? Everybody turn to Matthew chapter 5. Stephen made a good argument from Matthew 5, 17 and 18. And let's look at that. Now, far from teaching Stephen's position, Matthew 5, 17 and 18 actually teaches the opposite of Stephen's position. All you have to do is read it carefully. First of all, suppose this were saying that the Ten Commandments of the Sabbath are still binding when it says, "Think not that I am come to destroy the law of the prophets," in verse 17. Suppose it were saying that. Why would Stephen think that it means that only the Ten Commandments and maybe a few other laws are still binding? Because notice what he says. He says in verse 18, and Stephen read this, "Till heaven and earth pass, one jot or one tittle shall in no wise pass from the law till all be fulfilled." Now, if that's saying that the law has not passed, that we're still under the law, it's not just saying the Ten Commandments are still binding. It's saying not one jot or one tittle of the law. Nothing. Not even when you dot the I has anything passed. That means all the animal sacrifices, all the things about circumcision, every single thing would still be binding. Because he said, not one jot or one tittle has passed. He didn't say the Ten Commandments had not passed. He said, not one jot or one tittle. That would be the whole thing, Stephen. Yet he doesn't take the whole thing. He's inconsistent. But I want you to notice how this passage teaches that the law has passed. Notice verse 17, "Think not that I am come to destroy the law of the prophets. I am not come to destroy, but to fulfill." Now, answer this question. Did Jesus come to fulfill the law? It says he did. Did he fulfill the law? Well, in John 19:30, he says it is finished. Luke 24:44, it talks about Jesus fulfilled the law and the prophets. I believe Stephen will agree with me that by the time Jesus lived his life and died and was resurrected, he fulfilled the law. He said he came to fulfill the law. Stephen, do you agree he did fulfill the law? All right, that's plain from the passage. He had to agree with that. Now watch verse 18. "Till heaven and earth pass, one jot or one tittle shall in no wise pass from the law till all be fulfilled. In other words, it would not pass till it's fulfilled. And Jesus had got through saying that he came to fulfill it. And Stephen said that he did fulfill it by the time he died and was resurrected and so forth. By the time he had done everything he came to do. He did fulfill it. Verse 18 says it would not pass till it was fulfilled. Well, it wasn't fulfilled at the point he said this, but by the time you get to 3 years later, according to Stephen, he had fulfilled it. Now, if the Bible says it will not pass till it's fulfilled, and Stephen admits it's been fulfilled, that means it passed. Like if a union boss were to say, till heaven and earth pass, we will not go back to work till all our demands are met. What does that imply? That implies once their demands are met, they'll go back to work. We won't go back to work till our demands are met. That means when the demands are met, they'll go back to work. The law will not pass till it's fulfilled. That means when it's fulfilled, it passed. And you admitted it was fulfilled by Jesus. Because that's what he said he came to do in verse 17. Do you see that? This passage teaches that it did pass when it was fulfilled. That's the very point of it. And Stephen and I agree that he did fulfill it. Therefore, he has to agree that it has passed. Another illustration. Should I have an appointment with the dentist and announce to the receptionist when I come in, I have come not to destroy my appointment, but to fulfill it. Those are not canceling, I've come to fulfill it. I've come to sit in the chair. That means I would complete all the appointment called for. I would have fulfilled the appointment and not destroyed it. Destroying it would mean calling it and canceling it. No, I fulfilled it. I came and I did it. Would the appointment still be in force after I finished it? No, it was fulfilled. I finished it. It's over with. So it was with Christ. When he fulfilled the law passed. Matthew 5, 17 and 18 says that. Now let's go to all those Acts passages individually. But remember what I've already said in backdrop to that. And that is, as he admitted, the law has changed. He said it. Hebrews 10 teaches there's no more animal sacrifices. It's not binding anymore. Somebody was asking me about, what do you mean? Would it be a sin if you kept the Sabbath? And I said, well, if you bound it. Like this. Suppose your dog is sick and is about to die. And out of mercy, you shoot your dog. Okay? Now, that would be killing a dog. But if you did an animal sacrifice of a dog, that would be a religious observance. That would be a sin. But killing the dog out of mercy has nothing to do with religion. It's not wrong. So if I spend all day doing nothing on Saturday and don't end up working, that's not wrong. But if I bind it as a religious observance, then it is wrong. Now, Stephen said the law has changed. That's why we don't have to do animal sacrifices anymore. Yet, he goes to Acts to try to prove, and his application in every case was that Paul kept the law. Yet he's already said the law has changed. You don't have to do animal sacrifices. According to his reasoning, if these passages in Acts mean that Paul kept the law, that would mean that Paul kept the animal sacrifices and thought he had to do it. For example, look at Acts 21. That was the first one we went to. And I'm in Acts 21. You notice at the end of verse 24, it talks about Paul keeping the law. Let's explain this. First of all, before we do, notice the accusation in verse 21. He says that they're accusing him that the Gentiles are forsaking Moses, saying that they ought not to circumcise their children, neither to walk after the customs. Now, according to Stephen's reasoning here, evidently he's saying that this is a false accusation completely, and that Paul did what they accused him of not doing, and that was that he did teach they ought to circumcise their children. Because they're accusing him of teaching they didn't need to circumcise their children. You said that was a false accusation. Are you saying then that Paul taught that as a religious observance, people still have to circumcise their children today? Stephen, do you believe that you have to circumcise as a religious observance? I'm talking about physical circumcision. That's what we're talking about here, not spiritual. Do you believe it's still binding today? Physical circumcision? No, but that would be your point. Because circumcision here was included in part of the accusation of him not keeping the law. Notice another point in verse 25. As touching the Gentiles which believe, we have written and concluded that they observe no such thing, meaning keep the law, save only that they keep themselves from things offered to idols, from blood, from strangled, from fornication. The implication is here that the Jews were, we'll say, supposed to keep something that the Gentiles weren't. You see, whatever you're claiming that the Jews had to keep in keeping the law in verse 24, Stephen, it's saying the Gentiles did not have to keep that. And we're all Gentiles here. So if verse 24 is saying that Paul had to keep the Sabbath, or he did, then verse 25 would say that the Gentiles don't have to do that. All they have to do is keep themselves from things off the idols, from blood, and from fornication. They didn't have to keep the Sabbath. That's according to your reasoning, Stephen. If that's talking about the Sabbath there, then it's saying the Gentiles didn't have to keep this. Now here's the truth of the matter. The law had changed. Sabbath, circumcision, animal sacrifice, none of those were really binding anymore. But you remember passages like 1 Corinthians 9. Let me turn over there. I believe it's 1 Corinthians 9, verse 20 and 21. Paul did many things in order to try to help convert people. He says in verse 20, "And to the Jews I became a Jew, that I might gain the Jews. To them that are under the law is under the law, that I might gain them that are under the law. To them that are without the law is without law." In other words, he did things according to the law to try to win those who still thought you had to keep the law. Like, for example, we turn to Acts chapter 16, verse 3, in the case of circumcision, we're talking about Timothy. It says in verse 3 of Acts 16, "Him would Paul have to go forth with him, and took and circumcised him," that's Timotheus, "because of the Jews." Now, the keeping an action of the old law, yeah, he's circumcising Timothy. Why? Because the New Testament law taught that he ought to? Because it was still binding? No. It says because of the Jews. You see, he's becoming a Jew to the Jew, a Jew to the Jews. In other words, he would do things that he really didn't have to do to try to help convert others who still were thinking along those lines. And that's what is going on in Acts 21. You don't think when it says in Acts 21, 24, does anybody think here today when it says that he kept the law, that he was doing animal sacrifices? No. Therefore, why would you think it meant he was doing the Sabbath then? Obviously, he's keeping the law in the sense that he's trying to convert Jews who still believe they weren't Christians, still had to keep the law, and he's still doing it that way. They still had a problem with it. And then let's turn to another passage that Stephen brought up, Acts 23, verse 9. "There arose a great cry, and the scribes that were of the Pharisees' part arose and strove, 'We find no evil in this man.'" Stephen said, well, if Paul was teaching against the Sabbath, then these Pharisees would have found evil against him. Well, let me turn that around, Stephen. You just said that circumcision is no longer binding. And you did that because we see that in passages like Galatians 5 and many other passages say that it's not binding. Now, let me just raise the same question Stephen did about circumcision. If Paul was teaching that people didn't have to be circumcised anymore, then these Pharisees would have found some evil in him. Why didn't they find evil in him if he was teaching they didn't have to be circumcised anymore? They thought you had to be circumcised. That was one of their biggest deals. Now, let's apply it to animal sacrifices, as I said I would. If Paul was teaching that you don't have to do animal sacrifices anymore, then why didn't these Pharisees find some evil in him? You see how that argument for the Sabbath will work just as well for circumcision and animal sacrifices? And then turn to his next argument from Acts is Acts 24:14. "This I confess unto thee, that after the way which they call heresy, so worship I the God of my fathers, believing all things which are written in the law and the prophets." Well, first of all, we believe all things written in the law and the prophets. There's a big difference in saying you believe in something and saying it's still binding. Stephen, do you believe what's written in Genesis 6:14, where Noah was told to build an ark? Do you believe that? You believe it's true, but do you believe that you have to go out and build an ark? No. So when we see a law in Exodus that says a person has to keep the Sabbath, or a place in Genesis 22 that talks about circumcision, or a place in Exodus 29 that talks about animal sacrifices, we believe them. But just like you believe the ark was built and commanded, you don't believe it's applicable to you, we don't believe those things are applicable to us, because the New Testament teaches the law has changed, just like you said. But let's again apply this to animal sacrifices, since we said we're going to do that. We believe all things written in the law and the prophets. Was animal sacrifices, Stephen, written in the law and the prophets? Was that written anywhere in the law and the prophets, animals, to do animal sacrifices? Yes, we read, there's many examples. We read three of them in Exodus 29. Now here was Stephen's argument. It says here that Paul believed all things were written in the law and the prophets. That meant that he was still practicing the Sabbath as a religious law. Well, animal sacrifices were written in the law and the prophets. According to Stephen's argument then, that means Paul believes that animal sacrifices are still binding today. That won't work, will it? If it won't work for animal sacrifices, why does the same reasoning work for the Sabbath? And then Acts 25, verse 8, it says, "While he answered for himself, neither against the law of the Jews, neither against the temple, nor yet against Caesar have I offended anything at all." There's a truth that I maybe hadn't brought out as clearly as I ought to, though I started with it. The law itself said in Jeremiah 31 that there's going to be a new covenant. So when Paul taught there's a new covenant in Hebrews 8, and you don't have to do animal sacrifices in Hebrews 10, and you don't have to do circumcision in Galatians 5, and you don't have to do the Sabbath, Colossians 2 and Romans 7, the Ten Commandments, he's not offending the law. The law was the first one to say that there was going to be a new covenant. He's teaching what the law taught. The law taught there would come a time when there would be a new covenant. And then the last point that Stephen brought up, Acts 26:17, I wrote the reference down wrong. It says, "done nothing against the custom of our fathers." Where was that one? Is it 25:17? Anyway, it doesn't really matter where it was. If you find the reference, Stephen, it was a passage that says, "done nothing against the custom of our fathers." Maybe it was 28:17. Yeah, there it is. Let's plug in animal sacrifices there. The fathers there were the Jewish forefathers. Did they have a custom, religious custom of animal sacrifices? Sure they did. So Paul said, "I've done nothing against the custom of our fathers." According to Stephen's reasoning, that would prove then that we still have to do animal sacrifices today. Does everybody understand what I'm saying? How his reasoning on the Sabbath would prove we still have to be circumcised today, we still have to do animal sacrifices today? Because those things were written in the law just as much as the Sabbath was. He recognizes those things have been terminated. Why? Because he said the law has changed. That's a quote from him. Well, that's what we're saying about Sabbath. The Sabbath. The law has changed. The Sabbath was part of the law. Stephen, hand me that piece of paper right there. Did I say Stephen? Paul. That's Paul. How much time, Paul?
Yeah, 2.5 months.
Now, what did Colossians 2 say? It said that Jesus blotted these ordinances out, nailed them to the cross, and took them out of the way. And an example he gave of one he did that with was the Sabbath, the weekly Sabbath. He says, nobody can judge you based upon that anymore. That seems to me to be pretty clear. What did we say in Romans 7? We're dead to and delivered from this law. What does that mean? We're discharged from, loose from, liberated from the bond of anything. But that's the law that said thou shalt not covet, the Ten Commandment law. We're dead to and delivered from it. What does that mean? Stephen says there's been a change also of the law. That's what I said from the very beginning. And the law includes the Sabbath and the Ten Commandments. So that law has changed. When you change out the filter, you get a completely new filter. The parallel to Colossians 2, Ephesians 2, said that Jesus abolished the law of commandments. And that's the same law as Romans 7 is talking about that says, thou shalt not covet, that we're dead to and delivered from. Jesus said it's abolished. It didn't contradict Matthew 5. Matthew 5 said it would pass when it's fulfilled, and you agree it has been fulfilled. In Galatians 3, we're no longer under the schoolmaster, no longer under the law. The law was given till the seed should come, which is Jesus. That shows that after the seed has come, we're no longer under it. Galatians 5:4 shows it's very serious. If you try to bind the old law, circumcision, Sabbath, or anything, you lose your salvation. You're fallen from grace. Stephen admits that the church he worships with does not do this. On the first day of the week, when the disciples came together to break bread, that is, eat the Lord's Supper, Paul preached to them. Eastbrook, here, they do this. Stephen, do you do this on the first day of the week where you worship? The collection on the first day of the week? They here do here at Eastbrook every first day of the week. And so do we where I worship up in Huntsville. But I don't think that they do that where Stephen worships. They don't follow the New Testament there. But we ought to. We ought to. I appreciate the good job Stephen's doing. Now, I think what we've seen from the Bible is the Bible is very clear on this matter. Again, it's a matter of love. Jesus said, "Why call you me Lord, Lord, and do not the things that I say?" Now, you're calling Jesus Lord, but you're not willing to accept all these multitude of passages that teach the Sabbath is not binding anymore. We've got to make him Lord.